Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
Listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. My sister has a friend named Jessica, who she's been friends with since we were little. We were friends with them. They were sisters since we were little kids. And Jessica, a few weeks ago, sent me a scan via email of a very old photo. And in the photo was me and Jessica's sister Joanna and Jessica and some other friend of my sister's too. And it was probably taken around 1978 or 1979. And I'm pretty sure it was taken in Manhattan. We must have been on a day trip from Long Island to see a museum or a show or something like that. You know, something that in the 70s you could actually afford to do with a bunch of kids as a group in New York, before museum admissions went up to $20 a person and shows went up to $200 a person. You know, pre-Giuliani. Like in that era where Gerald Ford told, you know, New Yorkers to basically F off and die. It was the era of malaise, and we had a Jewish closet queen as a mayor. It was a simpler, more affordable time. But anyway, in this picture, we're all wearing very high-waisted jeans, of course, and t-shirts that had probably funny sayings on them or rainbows and unicorns or something like that. And we all have the same Tony Tennille hairstyle where it's all curled under all the way around your head, sort of like a long stretched out bowl. Blow dryer and curling iron required daily, of course. And we all are pretty much the same. We look like a bunch of 11 to 14 year old kids in the late 70s, except for one thing. Only one kid in the group is fat. Or what was considered fat for a kid in the 70s, which was probably 5 or 6 pounds overweight. So let's take a Let's Get Real moment here to try to figure out and guess who that fat kid was. Correct. It was me, your host. I was the chubster in the group. For whatever reason, my metabolism, too much reading and forced violin playing and not enough exercise, no exercise actually, or emotional issues that led to overeating, or an early food obsession, or genetics, whatever it was, I was the one in the group wearing the husky size jeans. Well, they were all still shopping in the girls' department. I was also the one wearing the very large, oversized glasses, with those lenses that were supposed to turn into sunglasses when you went outside, but never really quite went back to clear when you were inside, so I also had tinted glasses on. I was a very hot 11-year-old girl. Now, looking at that picture when Jessica sent it to me made me literally physically ill. I can't even think about it now without cringing. Not because of the Tony Tennille hairdo, which I actually loved, or the tinted glasses, but because of the endless suffering that those 5 or 6 pounds caused me. There were very few fat kids back then. It was actually somewhat rare. It wasn't like today, where obese kids are common. Just being slightly overweight as a kid back then really made you stick out. I mean, I went to the Prospect Park Zoo a couple of weeks ago, and it was full of school groups, and I was looking, and I would say that 1 out of 3 kids in school groups were overweight or obese, but we all know that. Now, those 5 pounds caused such great distress for me at school and consternation in my home that it set me up for years of disordered eating and secret binges and lying and guilt. And until eventually I invented a successful diet plan for myself in 9th grade consisting of a daily intake of 1 Snickers bar, a 2-liter bottle of Tab, and 3 big hits off of a joint every afternoon. That took the weight right off of me. But I don't really want to dwell on that anymore. So naturally what I did, what any self-respecting 21st century Westerner does when they want to erase a memory, I deleted the picture and the email. Instant therapy. Therapy at the speed of delete. I should trademark that. The point is that I couldn't look at it, and now that I've deleted that picture, I think I've moved on pretty well from those days. Now, the reason I'm bringing it up today is that I've been thinking a lot lately about diet products and diet foodiness products in general. You know, summer is coming. Memorial Day is 2 weeks away. This is where the summer panic would always start to set in because my mother used to start bugging me saying, it's almost bathing suit time. Because when you're 9, that's what you should be worried about, how you look in a bathing suit. And although it's been like 40 degrees here for the past couple of days, I'm more worried about putting blankets over my tomato plants than I am about exposing my pale flesh to the sun right now. But it's been on my mind too, because the other day there was a Daily News cover story in huge type, I think it was on Friday afternoon, about the New York City School Board banning butter in a misguided attempt to make school lunches healthier for our fat and getting fatter kids. Now, the same people who banned soda in schools but said it was okay to drink sweetened iced tea drinks and sports drinks and juices are now telling our school kids they can't eat butter, which is food, but can eat the refined, chemically processed vegetable oils that they use, which are quintessentially foodiness. Actually, the headline, in classic Daily News fashion, was somewhat misleading. The story was more about a manager in the school lunch program discovering that the cooks were ordering butter when there's no butter used in any of the recipes that they cook from. They don't use any butter, so why were they ordering butter? It was a big mystery. The kids in the schools can eat their bagels with cream cheese or jelly, but no butter. So a 500-calorie white flour carb bomb bagel with grape-flavored corn syrup gel is okay. But butter, which people have eaten for thousands of years and contains butyric acid, which is essential for brain development, isn't okay. At least they're not eating margarine anymore, I hope. The vegetable oils they cook with are bad enough. So no soda is allowed, but industrial grape jelly made of sugar and coloring but no grapes is okay. Now, back in my house, there was no way we were drinking soda, which was a fine plan. But we could drink all the orange juice and grape juice and apple cider and sweetened iced tea we wanted. Now, those are all fine, real foods, except the OJ, which was from frozen concentrate. And I don't oppose the consumption of them. I just know how sugary and caloric they are, and I wish my parents had recognized that as a probable cause of my childhood chub. Most smart parents today realize how much sugar is in all those drinks, and so they water their kids' juices down so they're not mainlining the sugar. Smart parents do that. Parents who realize that added sugars are the main source of calories in kids' diets today. And it's not just from drinks or candy, but in ketchup and spaghetti sauce and bread and kids' yogurt and fruit snacks and toddler teething products and chicken nuggets and, of course, cereal. Especially cereal. To know more about the cereal, please refer to my recent episode on this very important topic, Cereal is the Devil's Work, episode 61. Now, in a foodiness hall of shame-worthy twist, the cereals that shamelessly promote themselves as having more whole grains are usually the ones that have even more sugar to mask the taste of the grain. Because as you know from listening to this show, that we are a nation of overfed, oversweetened toddlers clutching sippy cups of sweet drinks and intolerant of anything that's not flavored or sweetened to an infantile level of palatability and a bowl of anything that tastes remotely like an actual grain or a plant and not sweet is unacceptable. Unsweetened foods have become unacceptable, like having your own natural breasts are unacceptable, or just eating your dinner instead of taking a picture of it is unacceptable, or teeth that aren't blindingly white, or having a private thought that you don't post publicly. Now, I like to look in other people's shopping carts when I'm at a supermarket. And when I say look, I really mean judge harshly, but quietly to myself or anyone who's near enough to hear me muttering about it. I'm not often found shopping at a traditional supermarket since they don't really sell any food there, but I've been spending a lot more time lately at my tiny bungalow in the country this spring now that I'm not teaching full time anymore. So I've been shopping in the suburbs a lot more lately, and I reflexively like to scope out what the 99% are buying. It's research, of course, not nosiness. I'm like the Jane Goodall of foodiness, watching 400-pound potato people fill grocery carts with diet zero-calorie microwavable donuts and healthy choice frosted flakes with added fiber and 24 packs of purple-flavored water. And if you've listened to this show or my old show, Why We Cook, for all of our many years together, you may recall that one of my other favorite things to do in a supermarket is to visit the discount produce shelf. You know, the manager's special. What do you mean you've never shopped the shelf? All supermarkets have them, a shelf in the produce department where they can put the overripe avocados, the dented eggplant, the ripe pears. Yeah, that's where you can find a ripe pear, by the way, on the clearance shelf. I've eaten some really great pears from there over the years. If you're looking for a good pear, you have to go to the discount shelf. The best tasting produce is the stuff that's usually just a day away from being rotten. And that stuff is always like half price. So when people say to me, oh, it's too expensive to buy fresh produce at a supermarket, I say bullshit. Shop the shelf, like me. I got 6 avocados for $1 last weekend. 6 avocados at Foragers Market in Chelsea would cost you about $60. I may be cheap, but I'm smart. But if you want to eat well and save money and not eat shit, shop the shelf, but not at my store because that one's mine. Now, Chris, my co-producer, says that at the Gristiti's around the corner from his house in Chelsea, they just put their overripe produce out on the street, ostensibly for the trash pickup, but really for the local homeless to pick through. So I may be shopping that corner soon, too. Now, anyway, like a good anthropologist looking to exploit the tragic lives of the masses for personal gain, I like to look in people's carts and make smug comparisons to my own. And you know what I see? Well, it depends on the demographic for sure, but often a whole lot of strawberry-flavored zero-calorie water, NutraSweetened fake Greek yogurt, frozen diet meals, low-fat cheese, healthy choice this, smart choice that, and cereal. Always with the cereal. All foodiness all the time, only this time put through the diet filter. I've done episodes on artificial sweeteners with super serious titles, like If You Want to Be Thin and Not Get Cancer, Eat Real Food. And I did a show on the diet plan industry with Let's Get Real's resident nutritionist Kristen Wortman called If Diets Were, Christy Alley Would Still Be Thin. But I've never done a foodiness diet food products show. I guess it was just like a little too obvious, too right underneath my nose, like the mustache that I also sported during the Tony Tennille years before I discovered the power of cream bleach. Now, by this point in your foodiness re-education, if you're still consuming diet, light, zero, or healthy anything, you obviously haven't listened to a word I've said. So it shouldn't really be necessary to do this show, only it does give us an opportunity to make fun of people who do consume diet, zero, calorie, light, and healthy foodiness products. I mean, to very seriously address this topic and try to help people. I'm here to help. As I've said before, foodiness creates a problem, then provides a foodiness solution to that problem. Foodiness makes people fat, then provides them with foodiness diet foods to falsely attempt to fix the problem. Only it doesn't fix them. It just traps them in the foodiness diet food rabbit hole, making them less and less able to recognize real food and more dependent, like a bunch of addicts helplessly caught on the foodiness diet food hamster cage wheel. Of course, we were all raised on the first wave of diet products like Diet Coke or Fat-Free Cool Whip, basically diet versions of totally artificial products. Of course, since then, we've all become morbidly obese, too. So now there's a diet, zero, light, or healthy choice version of every food and foodiness products, like a wheel within a wheel, putting us in an endless cycle of consuming diet foodiness products, gaining weight, needing more light foodiness products, gaining more weight, eating zero-calorie foodiness products, getting gastric bypass, and on and on and on. So after much research time in the suburbs this weekend, I decided to compile a list of some of my favorite diet foodiness products from my local suburban supermarket. But I never got past the Special K section because there are so many products in that one line alone. Now, in the 70s and 80s, when I was plugging in the curling iron every morning and listening to Muskrat Love, the diet choices were a lot smaller. I'd eat my bowl of Special K with skim milk, head off to school, and be virtually unconscious with hunger by lunchtime. That was before I invented the Snickers plan, which I really should have marketed with multiple flavors and combinations. Stupid me. We're going to take a very short break, and when we get back, we'll talk some more about my research in the suburbs this weekend.
You're listening to Snickers by Obesity on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Now remember that if you're a fan of Let's Get Real, you can listen to any show I've ever done on iTunes or on letsgetrealshow.com or on heritageradionetwork.org. You can also check out my YouTube channel now where there are videos of me sitting here and doing this show. You can also see my brand new video of my appearance at TEDx Berkeley last month. You can also follow me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. What else can you do? You could probably just send psychic messages my way too. That would work. Okay, so we're talking about diet foodiness products this week. And I was mentioning Special K in the last segment. Now, this whole Special K extended brand thing is getting really ridiculous. I spoke about this on my last episode, that Cereal is the Devil's Work show. But what I'm realizing is that now with these brand extended lines, you can basically survive on one brand extension product or another indefinitely. You can survive on Special K products now without ever having to touch a piece of actual food. It's become like astronaut food used to be in all its packaged and dehydrated and chemically concocted glory. So here we go. This is a list of the foods that are now in the Special K products line. Bear in mind, Special K started out as a foodiness version of cereal itself. It was a diet, low-calorie cereal that's now spun out into a whole line of different foodiness products. There are now 11 different varieties just of Special K cereal, from chocolatey strawberry flavor to protein flavor to fruit and yogurt flavor. 11. And along with those, there's the Special K water that comes in multiple flavors, the Special K cracker chips in 5 flavors, crackers, which are not the same as cracker chips, in savory herb or multi-grain, brownie bites in fudgy or blondie, pastry crisps, whatever that is, in 7 flavors. It turns out they're like diet Pop-Tarts, basically. red berry cereal flavored waffles. Did you get that? Cereal flavored waffles. Frozen flatbread breakfast sandwiches. Special K brand frozen flatbread breakfast sandwiches in three different varieties. Cereal bars in seven flavors. Protein granola bars in two flavors. Protein meal bars in eight flavors. Protein snack bars in two flavors. Popcorn chips in three flavors. Breakfast shakes in three flavors. Protein shakes in five flavors. And finally, protein water mixes in pink lemonade or strawberry kiwi flavor. Now, how we got from that bowl of puffed rice Special K nothing food to strawberry kiwi flavored protein water mix and red berry cereal flavored waffles is beyond me. I mean, really, you'd be better off following my personal Snickers bar diet plan, the Snickers bar tab and weed plan from ninth grade. Of course, back in the 70s and 80s, there were much fewer foodiness diet food choices. There was diet soda and sugar-free gum. There was lean cuisine and stuff like that. But then along came Snackwells and the big fat-free craze. And now it's utterly pervasive. But notice how the word diet isn't used so much anymore. Other than Diet Coke, you don't see that word anymore. Now it's about zero and healthy choice and smart choice. It's the same old foodiness shit with a new branding spin on it. And I think that's what's most evil about it, is conflating zero and smart and healthy with processed and fake and chemically. But now we've gone so far down the rabbit hole that even a real food that already has zero calories has been turned into a diet foodiness product. Let's start with water. Now, I suppose water was always God's gift to dieters because you can drink it all day and you would never gain a pound. Remember that? If you were trying to lose weight, people would say, drink more water. Water has zero fat and zero calories, and it originally came billions of years ago from asteroids and meteorites that carried the water to primordial Earth from billions of miles away so that the planet would come alive and we could all exist and stay hydrated and keep the pounds off. But I guess that wasn't really enough, because now we have diet strawberry-flavored zero-calorie enhanced water and ads for it that consume us, which you'll remember if you listen to my recent episode called Trending Now, Edible Consumers, Chicken That Makes You Gay, and $18 Artisanal Cocktails in Cleveland. I mean, we already have water, and it's free. And in most cities, the water is okay to drink. Just get yourself a Brita filter to make sure and you're set to go. I mean, until they've started fracking everywhere in the country, at which point your faucet will blow up like faucets have been doing in the Midwest. But the point is that corporations are people and it's their right to poison our water with gas so that your kitchen sink does blow up. This isn't the third world. We have free, safe drinking water in this country, which is something that two-thirds of the world's population doesn't have. It's an unbelievable gift to have free, clean, running water coming fresh and cold right into your own house. So why do we need to bottle it and flavor it and enhance it and then resell it back to ourselves for a profit, but this time with zero calories, which it never had in the first place? Do not trust your water. Okay, you think maybe it's unsafe. You're not so sure about the source of your city water. So it's safer to buy water from an unknown source in a chemical-leaching plastic bottle or with added chemical flavors and sweeteners and colors because you think that maybe your constantly tested municipal water source isn't safe? Now I understand how Bush got elected twice. And if you need the strawberry flavor in your water, then cut up a strawberry and drop it in. The problem with that, of course, is that what we now think of as strawberry flavor tastes nothing like actual strawberries. I've discussed this in pretty much every episode I've ever done, that we've become so attuned and programmed to the flavor of flavors that the actual flavors of food are no longer palatable or appealing to us. The simulacra has outdone the actual. We're fucked. If your brain is expecting strawberry flavor, and you get real strawberry instead, which doesn't even actually taste like real strawberry anymore because they're all sold all year long out of season and they taste more like red celery, then I guess it doesn't even really matter anymore since no one can even remember the taste of a real in-season sun-ripened juicy strawberry eaten right out of the field in late June, just like I did as a fat kid, which was probably the only exercise I ever got back then, was when we went fruit picking. Maybe it was all the chemical pesticides and fertilizers that I was exposed to out on those fields that was making me fat. I wouldn't be surprised one bit because we have discussed chemical obesogens here with Kristen Wortman. And I did grow up in a house built on a former potato field like most of Long Island. But I'm digressing. The point is that water is already zero calorie. It isn't like Coke Zero, a derivative of Diet Coke just marketed for men in a black can because apparently men think of Diet Coke as a women's drink. Water is already water zero. It's just that nature is really bad at branding itself. The branding budget for nature has been slashed due to cutbacks along with air traffic control and Head Start programs. And how about diet foodiness products like low-calorie yogurt or reduced fat cheeses? Well, the French, Italians, Germans, Scandinavians, they all eat full-fat cheese and yogurt all the time, albeit in much smaller portions than us, and they have much less obesity. Why do we feel compelled to buy lesser versions of perfectly good foods that people have eaten for thousands of years? Why can't we trust our ancestors anymore? How did it come to be that we took our trust away from grandma and gave it to Kraft or to General Foods? Take milk. It's been dietified too. Why do we insist on our kids drinking low-fat milk, but then we take them to Pizza Hut for a stuffed four-crust cheese Wally special? That's why places like Pizza Hut have those special pizzas with the added extra cheese pockets in the crust and piled on top, because there's so much surplus milk fat around from all the low-fat and diet dairy products that the government basically gives it to the food chains to use it up. So the very same government that tells you to eat low-fat dairy is also the one encouraging and subsidizing the fast food industry to use more surplus milk fat in their products. Now, here's one more story from the Let's Get Real Historical Archive before I leave you today. Years ago, before I met Mr. Let's Get Real, I had a boyfriend named Dave. Dave was a good guy, and he had very nice parents, both of whom were very overweight, even though the dad was a pediatrician and the mom was a former nurse. Now, we all went to a hotel one summer. And at breakfast, his mom pulls out a Ziploc bag from her purse that had a brownish powder in it. And my first thought was, wow, cool. I didn't know that Dave's mom was a heroin addict. But no, she wasn't a junkie. She was a sweetness addict, like most Americans. She proudly showed us her little bag, which contained a mix of cinnamon and artificial sweetener, which she planned to put all over her pancakes instead of syrup. Because the syrup, she reckoned, would have been too much sugar for her, never mind the stack of 4 9-inch pancakes made of white flour and white sugar and heavy cream and melted butter on her plate. I used to work at that hotel. I knew the recipe by heart. She was fine with devouring those. The 800 calories of pancakes was okay, but the tablespoon of syrup, absolutely not. Of course, all the labels like zero, light, diet, and healthy are just classic Orwellian doublespeak. And that's why you need me, Erica Wides, and this show, Let's Get Real, to keep you free and to get real. So how do you get real? How do you stay free from diet foodiness? Well, unlike a lot of foodiness re-education programs, this one is pretty simple. If you want to eat or drink something diet light, zero calorie, or healthy, drink water or eat a carrot. But for God's sake, if you don't know this by now, what are you listening to this show for? Oh, of course, because you want to make fun of people who don't know any better, like me. So if you don't want to eat shit and you want to make fun of people who do, keep on tuning in to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food here on heritageradionetwork.org. Remember that May is membership month here at Heritage Radio Network, so don't forget to renew your membership. Thanks to Joe in the control room. Thanks to Chris Nutter, my co-producer. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.